The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam. First Canto, Chapter Number 13, Text Number 59, given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasatikari, recorded on September 2nd, 2012, in Timișoara, Romania.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Vidura tu tat ashcharyam nishamya kurunandana harsha shoka yuta tasmat gantha tirta nishevaka Vidarastu tad ashcharyam
Vidarastu tad ashcharyam
Nishamya kuru nandana
Nishamya kuru nandana
Harshashoka yutas tasman
Harshashoka yutas tasman
Ganta tirta nishevaka
Ganta tirta nishevaka
Vidarastu tad ashcharyam
Vidarastu
Nishamya kuru nandana
Nishamya kuru nandana
Harshashoka yutas tasmad
Harshashoka yutas tasmad
Gantha tirta nishevaka
Gantha tirta nishevaka
Vidura
Vidura
Vidura also
Vidura also
To
But
Tat,
that incident.
Ashcharyam,
wonderful.
Nishamya,
seeing.
Kurunandana, O son of the Kuru dynasty.
Harsha,
delight.
Shoka,
grief. Yuta,
affected by
Tasmat,
from that place,
Gantha,
will go away.
Tirtha,
place of pilgrimage.
Nishevaka,
for being enlivened.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada.
Vidura, being affected with delight and grief, will then leave that place of sacred pilgrimage.
Purport.
Vidura was astonished to see the marvelous departure of his brother Dhritarashtra as a liberated yogi. For in his past life, he was much attached to materialism. Of course, it was only due to Vidura that his brother attained the desirable goal of life. Vidura was therefore glad to learn about it, but he was sorry he could not make his brother into a pure devotee. This was not done by Vidura because of Dhritarashtra's being inimical to the Pandavas, who were all devotees of the Lord. An offense at the feet of a Vaishnava is more dangerous than an offense at the lotus feet of the Lord. Vidura was certainly very liberal to bestow mercy upon his brother Dhritarashtra, whose past life is very materialistic. But ultimately, the result of such mercy is certainly dependent on the will of the Supreme Lord in the present life. Therefore, Dhritarashtra attained liberation only, and after many such liberated states of life, one can attain to the stage of devotional service. Vidura was certainly very mortified by the death of his brother and sister-in-law. and the only remedy to mitigate such lamentation was to go out on pilgrimage. Thus Maharaj Yudhisthira had no chance to call back Vidura, his surviving uncle. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Parakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shimishakam Vitamscha. So, there are many, many points to note. Actually, there's unlimited treasure of transcendental knowledge in this verse. So we have a few minutes. We'll try to hit a few high points. The first interesting point is, notice the tense of the translation and the tense of the purport. The translation is in the future tense and the purport's in the past tense. Very interesting, a literary point of view. Narada Muni, you see, is predicting what will happen. Precisely, telling exactly what will happen. Vidura will then leave that place of sacred village. In the purport, it describes how he left that place. It's interesting. The verse is the future tense, the purport is the past tense. It shows you the great power of Narada Muni. He is Trikalajna. He is the perfect knower of past, present, and future. Another point is, in spite of the fact that he was so powerful, he could in mystic yoga, he could burn his own body to ashes. See, in those days, even the yoga system was known perfectly by the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas also. They knew how to do the mystic yoga process, you see. They're very expert in this, the Brahmins and Kshatriyas. So he was able, knowing this art, he was able to burn his own body to ashes by his yogic prowess. But in spite of that yogic prowess, he was not able to attain to the platform of pure devotional service. So because somebody possesses the mystic power, they can, you know, burn their body to ashes, or they can, you know, do the property city, acquire something from a distant place. Like Prabhupada gave the example about one yogi in Calcutta. He was able to bring fruits all the way from Kashmir. Just by property city. He was able to acquire that and bring it all the way from Kashmir to Calcutta. Some fruits, pomegranate fruits. So even if one possesses such mystic powers to be able to acquire something from a distant place, or be able to smaller than the smallest, you see, even if they lock the yogi in prison, he can just become little tiny and go right through the cracks in the wall. You see. Even if one has all these mystic powers, you see, still being able to become so light you can walk on water, you see. Like Christ had that mystic power. So these mystic powers don't mean you're a liberated soul. Sometimes these yogis, they develop the mystic powers and they come back into the society and try to fool the innocent people into thinking that they are God. But note here, even though Dhritarashtra was accomplished in the mystic yoga system, so much so he could burn his body to ashes and actually attain liberation, which here must therefore mean the impersonal liberation. Because there's two types of liberation. There's personal and impersonal. Impersonal liberation is temporary. Personal liberation is permanent. Here's an example of impersonal liberation. Just like many years ago when I was a brahmachari at our temple in Dallas, we're talking 1972, many years ago, 40 years ago. There was some prison, a low security prison, about maybe 40 miles east of Dallas down the interstate highway. And so there was a request. One prisoner was being given a weekend pass to come to the Hare, you know, for some, one day pass, to able to come to the Hare Krishna love feast. So I drove out there and picked him up and brought him to the temple. He enjoyed the feast, and then I drove him back. You see, and put him back to the prison that night. So temporarily he was liberated, you see. I'm out of prison. At the Hare Krishna love feast. Wow, prasadam, kirtan, you see. He's liberated. But then he has to go back, that night he has to go back to the prison, you see. So impersonal liberation is like a temporary path. You're out of the prison of material existence, but you're not able to actually take complete shelter in the spiritual world where you can remain there, you see. They float in the sky of Brahman, but they can't actually enter into Vaikuntha planet. You understand the difference? The impersonalists can actually achieve the spiritual sky, but they're not allowed to enter any planets there. Since they can't take shelter on a spiritual planet, then after they burn up their punya, their stock of pious activities that enable them to enter into the spiritual sky, bloop, they fall down again into the material world. Aruya kishchena parangpadam tada padanchito nadrcha yushmad angriyaha. This is stated in Bhagavatam. Even though kishchena with great endeavor, kishchena, with great endeavor, they achieve the Brahman sky, the Paravyam, still they have to come down again to material existence. So, Dhritarashtra did not achieve any permanent liberation, only a temporary liberation. We don't know the history of what happened to him after that. What we do know is liberation was only temporary, as confirmed by this purport. Why could he not get the ultimate liberation of going back to Godhead? Because he had offended Vaishnavas. To offend a Vaishnava is more dangerous than offending the Lord, Prabhupada said. This Vaishnava aparad is very, very dangerous thing. It can decrease your duration of life. It can rob you of your good reputation. It's a very, very dangerous thing. It is called Hati Mata, mad elephant. In other words, spiritual life means you're cultivating the creeper of bhakti. When you hear from the bona fide spiritual master, Pramanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavanjeev, Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. After wandering throughout the Brahmanda of the universe through countless numbers of lifetimes, Konya Bhagyavan Jeev, one living entity who is very, very, very fortunate, receives by the mercy of the spiritual master and the grace of Krishna the Bhakti Lata Bij, Bhakti Lata Bij, the seed of devotional service planted within his heart. So if that fortunate jiva soul will then give up sinful activities such as illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication and gambling, and he will water that seed by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, and that little seed then will start to grow in the heart. The seed then becomes a seedling. it gradually becomes a creeper. It gradually just grows and grows and grows. But what happens if some mad elephant comes stomping into the garden of your heart? All it takes is those big round feet, you know? All it takes is one whomp and your creeper's finished. It's wiped out. So, therefore, Vaishnava Aparad is called mad elephant. Because one step finished, the creeper is completely shattered. You see. So, therefore, it is advised that one keep a very strong fence around the creeper, the garden of one's heart where that creeper is growing, so the elephant can't get in. You have to protect yourself against Vaishnava Aparad. It's a very, very important thing. Some devotees neglect this principle. That's why people go away from our movement, actually. It's the number one cause for fall down is Vaishnava Aparad. You say, well, I think it's sex attraction or something. No, it's Vaishnava Aparad. Because if you offend Vaishnavas, then you don't get the higher taste for Krishna consciousness. And when you don't get that higher taste, then you become a sitting duck for Maya Devi. Come on, I got a pretty girl over here, come on. You see, you become a sitting duck for material attraction. Because as soon as you commit Vaishnava Aparad, you can't get any taste from the name. No taste. And then what taste is left? Sense gratification. We want taste, you see. Either bhakti ras or bhoga ras, you see. Everybody wants ras, they want taste. So if you don't get it from bhakti, you're going to got to get it from bhoga, from sense enjoyment. Kama, you see, lust. If you don't get it from bhakti, you're going to try to get it from lust. It's your choice. Intelligent person will study. What is the result of bhakti ras and what is the result of kama ras, you see. Intelligent person will analyze, you see. Krishna gives a very nice description in Bhagavad Gita, 2:62-63. Jayato vishayam pumsam sangateshu bhajayate sangat shanjayate kama kamat krodo vijayate krodat bhavasi sang maha smriti vibrama smriti bhangshat vridi nasho burinashat pranashati. While contemplating the objects of the senses, the person develops attachment for them. From such attachment, lust develops. From lust, anger arises. From anger, delusion. From delusion, bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost. And when intelligence is lost, bloop, they fell down in the material pool. So one has to be very, very careful. If you can always... So how do you protect yourself from Vaishnava Aparad? Sometimes we hear, well, whatever you do, don't commit Vaishnava Aparad. Okay. I think I just go to the forest. I'm just pretty scared. I'm afraid to associate with them. I may do something wrong. You see? So, to simply say, don't, whatever you do, don't make an offense against the devotee, that's a negative, you need a positive instruction. If I say, don't, whatever you do, don't do anything wrong. What am I supposed to do then? Remain inactive? You see? Don't do anything wrong, you see. You come to the temple, now don't, be, whatever you do, don't do anything wrong. He gets getting scared, oh my God. Don't do anything wrong. What am I going to do then? I'm afraid to do anything. I might do something wrong. Better just go and stand back in the corner and kind of look around, you know. Don't talk to anybody. Don't say anything. Don't do anything. Maybe I shouldn't even take prasadam, you know. I might take it in an offensive way. You see? So no, there actually, there has to be a positive instruction. So the way to avoid Vaishnava Aparad is to always respect the Vaishnavas, you see. You have to have a positive instruction. So how do you do that? Vanchakalpatarubhyascha kripasindubhyebhacha patidanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. We offer our respectful obeisances to the Vaishnavas. We respect them. We honor and respect and worship the devotees within our hearts. We look for the good qualities in the devotees. You see? We should always see the good qualities in the devotees. Prabhupada said everybody has a combination of good and bad qualities. The honeybee, he looks for the honey, and the fly looks for the sower, you see? So Vaishnava is like a honeybee. He's always looking for the good in every devotee. And then someone say, well, why did my Guru Maharaj chastise me then? That must be his fault, because he's supposed to look for the good in me and only. You see? My Guru Maharaj or my temple president or my spouse, you know, whatever. If somebody chastised me, that means they're not proper, because you're just supposed to see the good in the devotee. Well, if that's true, then why don't you see the good? They must have chastised you for a good reason. You see? Instead of thinking, why are they not looking for the good? Why are you not looking for the good? You should see the good side. I must have done something wrong, and now I'm getting this mercy, you see. So this is a very important point. If you want to be liberated, don't be an offender against devotees. It's a very, very strong lesson here. In this pastime of Dhritarashtra, if you want to go back to Godhead, do not be an offender to devotees. Because a Vaishnava Paradhi, one who offends Vaishnavas, cannot go back to Godhead. It's a simple principle. You won't go back in this lifetime if you're an offender against Vaishnavas. You won't. Krishna will not allow you into his abode. You're an offender against Vaishnavas. You cannot come to my abode. It's a simple principle. So, but I've committed so many offenses against devotees. Oh my God, what am I going to do? Even in my mind, I'm thinking so many offensive things against devotees. What's my hope? Well, you have to start looking for the good in the devotees, you see. You have to see the good in every devotee, you see. Even the spiritual master, whose duty is to look for all the faults in the heart of his disciples, even the spiritual master, he is more interested to see the good in the heart of his disciples. Because when he sees that good thing in your heart, the spiritual master, when he finds that little tiny spark of bhakti in the middle of all those sense gratificatory ashes, when he finds that little spark of bhakti in your heart, then he fans that spark into a blazing fire. You see? So even the spiritual master who is pointing out your faults, he's more interested to see that good in you, so he can encourage that and fan that spark until it becomes a blazing fire, burning up all your impurities. So everyone, even those whose duty is to find fault with you, because Chanakya Pandit says, the spiritual master doesn't find fault with his disciple, he is the enemy of his disciple. He's not his friend, he's his enemy. So even that person whose duty is to find fault with you, he's more interested in seeing the good in you, so he can encourage that and amplify that and bring that good out of you more and more and more until it completely neutralizes all of your bad qualities and you become a pure devotee. So everyone looks for the good in the Vaishnava culture. Everybody is very forgiving. And the quality of forgiveness, you see. Let's say somebody abused me really badly. They mistreated me like anything. So what should I do? I should hold a grudge against them, right? I have a heavy grudge in my heart. Yeah, they really abused me. They mistreated me. I'm going to hold this heavy grudge against them in my heart. That's what I should do, right? Well, if I do that, then what am I doing? To mistreat someone is wrong, right? You shouldn't mistreat anybody. So, two wrongs don't make a right. If I'm mistreated by somebody, and then I hold a grudge against them for mistreating me, you see? If someone mistreats me, I hold a grudge against them for mistreating me. What am I doing? I'm mistreating myself. So, one mistreatment, that's bad. But two mistreatment, that's even worse. So if you mistreated me, if I hold a grudge against you, then I'm also mistreating me. Because I'm denying myself access to the taste of the name. Any grudge you hold against somebody is a smudge in your heart. Don't hold grudges. They fill your heart with smudges. If you hold grudges, you're simply smudging your own heart, dirtying it. Smudge means dirty. Dirtying it. A smudge is some dirt. So, do yourself a favor. If you're mistreated, don't mistreat yourself by holding a grudge against the person who mistreated you. Do yourself a favor. Be kind to yourself. You see? Being kind, repaying that disrespect, that mistreatment with respect, is giving kindness to them and giving kindness to yourself. Lord Chaitanya says, if you want to taste the nectar of the name, you have to give all respect to others, even if they don't respect you at all. Is it? You may say, well, how can I do that? But it's your own self-interest to do that. Even in the Vedic culture, they were fighting to the death. I was telling the other day, I don't know if it was here I told, but, you know, Krishna, Arjuna, and Bhishma, or Bhima, they came to Jarasandha disguised as Brahmins. And we have come to beg charity from you. Actually, they wanted to kill him. But is a kshatriya, a dutiful kshatriya, oh, some Brahmins have come, yes, whatever charity you would like, I will give you. We would like to fight with you. All right. But Krishna, you're a coward. You ran away from the battlefield, run short. No, I won't fight with a coward. And Arjuna, you're too weak, but Bhim, you're a suitable match. So every day they were dueling, fighting to the death. And they were both so powerful that neither could kill the other, you see. So every night they would get together as friends, laughing, joking, talking over dinner, you know. You see? So just see, even they're fighting to the death, still they're friends. They're not like inimical. Oh, you rascal. I don't want to ever talk to you. No. On the battlefield, it's fight to the death. But off the battlefield, okay, let's get together, have some dinner, have some talk, crack a few jokes, you know. You see? It's amazing. That's Vedic culture, you see. Even your enemy, you're fighting to death during the daytime. In the evening, you're the best of friends. Intimate friends. Is it? So, what does that tell us about, you know, our Vaishnava relationships? Even though I have a disagreement with you, a very strong disagreement with you, still, we are the best of friends. You understand? That is Vaishnava culture. Even if we have a very, very heavy disagreement with each other, still, we are the best of friends. That's Vedic culture. There's no offense. We can disagree. Disagreement proves that my bodies are wrong, you see. I have my opinion, you have your opinion. Someone says, today the Jiris must be dressed in red. Another Pujari says, no, I think green is better. Someone said, no, blue is better. So they're going to have a fist fight in the Pujari room. Somebody gets punched out in the Pujari room over the color of the deity outfit. You see? Does that make any sense? No. They all want to serve Krishna. But they have different opinions on how we can serve Krishna the best. Well, I think we should have cauliflower, of course, for the Sunday feast. No, eggplant. No, broccoli. And they had, you know, they had the Bakura War, you know. Doesn't see, we shouldn't fall into these little silly false ego traps, you know. You know what I mean? Fighting over insignificant little things. We shouldn't fall into this trap. It's the influence of Kali. We should just try to always be humble and always be willing to hear the other person. You see? The fact is we are all cocky, we're all proud. We're all like peacocks strutting around. You see? We're all proud peacocks. That's a fact. Yes, I am great. We're all guilty of it. That's why we have material bodies. Because we're proud as peacocks. You understand? So if somebody wants to, you know, has a complaint to Prabhu, I don't think you're doing this, I don't think you have the proper attitude about Krishna consciousness. I really have to talk to you about this. I don't think you have the proper attitude about Vaishnava relationships. What are you going to do? Huh? What do you mean? No, you should feel this is Krishna. Krishna is sending someone to help me understand. Let me open my heart up and just, you know, shut up and listen. How many mouths did God give you? One. How many ears did God give you? Two. That means you should be twice as interested in hearing as you are in speaking. If in every marriage, the husband and wife, if they'll follow this principle, I should be twice as interested in hearing as I am in speaking, there'd be no fighting within the marriages. You see? And no fighting in the temple also between the managers, the devotees. If everybody had followed this principle, God gave me two ears and one mouth, therefore I should be twice as interested in hearing as I am in talking. See, then there's no problem in our society. Our society become Vaikuntha, all of them, there'll be no more divorces in ISKCON. Everything will become very... The trouble is, we're more interested, twice as interested in talking as we are in hearing. That's the problem. We want to talk. Now you want to hear? Oh no, I don't want to hear. You see? You understand? Do you understand? This is our disease. We don't want to hear. Well, shut up and learn to hear, you see. Just shut your damn mouth and learn how to hear. You see? We do. That's the reality. If we want to be, if you really want to advance in Krishna consciousness, just shut your stupid mouth and learn how to hear. Because that's how you, that's when you really start to advance, when you learn how to hear submissively and only speak when it's proper to speak. Prabhupada explains in the light of the Bhagavad, the description of autumn actually is what it is. It's a summary study or it's a representation of the description of autumn chapter of the Bhagavatam. In the light of the Bhagavad, he describes how the rivers, during the rainy season, they flow. And during the dry season, they dry up. So Prabhupada says that this is the mode or the this is how great reformers function. They know when to speak and they know when not to speak. The great reformers, you know, people who can actually reform the whole world, they know when to speak and they know when not to speak. Now they always talk. Someone's always talk. They are not very advanced in Krishna consciousness. The one who knows when to speak and when to hear, that person can actually have the biggest impact on the world society. So, I've done a lot of talking now. Maybe I can squeeze a few, just slightly go over time, if there's any question. With your permission, Prabhu.
Yes, of course.
All right. Some temples, they say
today,
no.
Today's Sunday, so we...
What is
today's Sunday is not work day.
Today's no work Sunday, day today. Oh, today we can go maybe
yes,
10 minutes more or something.
We are more relaxed today.
Oh, okay, that's good. That's good. So, any questions? Yes.
May I please ask, how can we develop gratitude towards Krishna and...
Gratitude?
Gratitude, yes. How can we develop?
You just have to see things as they are. I mean, Krishna's giving you everything. What is he not giving you? Everything you have is here. Your very existence is given to you by him. Absolutely everything that you have, your existence, your consciousness, your body, your possessions, your relationships, the planet you're sitting on right now, that you'd be floating in outer space if this planet wasn't given to you by Krishna. You're sitting on a planet right now. Is it? Absolutely everything has been given to you by Krishna. So you have to just analyze things intelligently and realize that you're totally dependent on him for everything, so you must therefore be grateful for everything he's given you. Otherwise you're an ingrate. You know that English word, an ingrate, someone who is ungrateful. An ungrateful rascal is called an ingrate. Otherwise, you're simply an ingrate. It's like a dog, you know, you give him some food and he bites you. If you don't have gratitude to Krishna, you're like a biting dog that bites the hand that feeds him. You're biting him. If you're not grateful, you're simply biting the hand that feeds you. What sort of attitude is that? Is it? Are you a human being? If you're a human being, you must be grateful. If you're not grateful, you're simply a dog. You understand? Any other question? Yeah.
How can I properly show my love to the devotees?
By a wonderful first-class service mood. Always being willing to hear from the devotees. Actually, it's described by Srila Rupa Goswami in the Upadeshamrita. There are six loving exchanges. You see, you give gifts to the devotees, you accept gifts from the devotees. That also means service. Giving service is also a giving a gift. You see, giving service to devotees, accepting service from the devotees, giving a gift to the devotees, accepting gifts from the devotees, gratefully. To distribute prasadam to the devotees, to accept prasadam the devotees give you from them, gratefully accept it from them, to reveal your heart to the devotees, and to open your ears when they want to reveal their heart to you. These are the six loving exchanges mentioned by Srila Rupa Goswami, and if you study Prabhupada's purport, which is a very, very long purport, it'll give you very great, very deep insight into how to love devotees. It's very important then. In the early days we thought, well, love is for karmis. They had this idea, we're not supposed to only, you can't have love amongst the devotees. It was in the early days of ISKCON, there used to be this attitude, you can't love the devotees, that's maya. That's, you know, you can only love Krishna, you can't love the devotees. But that's actually a Kanishta mentality, we found out later on. When that book came out, it was so nice. I remember in the beginning we just had a manuscript. I got a Xerox copy of the manuscript. And I went, wow, Rupa Goswami is telling us to love the devotees. That was like, in the early days, we didn't have that idea. You just love Krishna, you know. It's maya to love the devotees, Prabhu. You know, it's a weird idea we had. In the early days, we didn't know the philosophy very well. You can't love anybody except Krishna. You can't love the guests that then come to the temple. That's maya. You know, you can't show love to the guests. And there's really some weird ideas that I sent to the Sankirtan newsletter. I wrote in a thing about how we should treat the guests like kings. You know, really give them a wonderful, wonderful reception. And the devotee in charge of the Sankirtan newsletter made fun of mine. He didn't. He made fun of it and didn't print it. He criticized me for this attitude. But then he said, but seeing Vishnujan Swami here, actually, what you're saying kind of makes sense, because Vishnujan Swami was very much into treating the guests in a very wonderful way, you see, very royally and nicely treating the guests. So anyway, now we've realized, since the Upadeshamrita has been published many years ago, that this is very, very important to have loving relationship with Vaishnavas, because you... And it's confirmed in the Adi Purana that unless you're the devotee of Krishna's devotee, Krishna doesn't accept that you're his devotee. Ye me bhakta jana parata, na me bhakta stite janaha. You see, na me bhaktas, that's very simple Sanskrit, not my devotee. Na, not me, my bhaktas, devotee. Krishna says, if you're my devotee, na me bhaktas, you're not my devotee. But if you're the devotee of my devotee, then you're my devotee. So become the devotee of the devotees. You see? That's why we have a spiritual master also. We accept as the full embodiment of Krishna's mercy, that I fully give myself to this person. That's why I have a guru also. Become a devotee of the devotees. But everyone we respect is our Prabhus. The ladies are also our Prabhus, you see. The mother is the Mataji is also a Prabhu. She is my master also. My father is my master. My mother is also my master. So accepting all the devotees as Prabhu or master and serving them, you see, then the love will come. Right now I may not feel that love. But that love is already there within you, dormant. If you'll practice, if you'll act as if you love the devotee, even if you don't feel any love, act as if you felt love. Like you're an actor on the stage, this is a drama. Now your part is to show love for all the devotees in the play. So act as if you love them. and act it perfectly. Then you'll actually see, actually, this is not a play, this is real. I actually really do love them. They're great. I love these people. They're dear to my heart, you see. So in this way, try to understand the mood of the Brijavasis. The word da means give, you see. So we see Vrindavan, the Jashoda, one who gives fame, Kirti Da, you see. The Da word we see in Vrindavan, that is the mood of Vrindavan. Give, 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 give. See how much you can give to the devotees every day. How much you can give this devotee, how much you can give that devotee. Give, 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 you see. Even the Christians say, very nicely, it's better to give than to receive. That's a fact. The more you can give to devotees, the more you will get Krishna. He's more interested to see how much you will serve the devotees than he is to how much you will serve him. He's more interested to see how much you will serve the devotees. So that gives you some ideas. Does that help? Okay. Any other questions? Yes.
What gifts can we make to devotees except prasadam and our willing to listen to them? Is there anything else we can give them?
Debbie, can you help me on that?
She says that what gifts we can give to the devotees except besides prasadam and gifts?
Well, sometimes it's difficult because devotees don't have any possessions, you know. you can, if you go to, if you go to the holy dham, bring back Mahaprasadam for all the devotees. That will be certainly greatly accepted. You know, if you know somebody needs something, you see, they only have one. You know, if one of the ladies only has one sari, you know, you see, she wears the same sari every day. She must only have one sari. So you can give us, you can be sensitive and actually study and see the devotees and see what they could use as a gift. If you give something that's not needed, then it, you know. But if you actually you get to know the devotee and see what they actually could use, what they actually need. You see, and that's very good. For traveling preachers, actually, the best thing is money to pay off their travel expenses. That's always, for traveling preachers. Sometimes people give me so many socks, I just had to finally just get, I had this huge stash of socks in it. I finally just give them away in a huge thing. It's too much in them. And they didn't even fit me that well. Even though they wouldn't stay on my feet in improper size and this and that. So it's actually good to know what's actually needed and what's useful for the devotee. And but as far as receiving gifts, Prabhupada was very graciously received gifts. People would give Prabhupada so many gifts and he would utilize them and then he would give them away as prasadam. But if they give him watches, they give him rings, he would accept and he would give away also as prasadam. So the main thing is you have to see what devotees actually need. Especially like your temple authority, your Murari Krishna Prabhu, you can ask if you can ask him what is, because he has big needs here. The temple has so many needs, so you can say, I want to give something. What's the best thing I can give? He says, well, we need this, we need that. I'm sure you can have a big list of things that are needed. You see, you can ask him. Well, I'd like to give something. I want to give something to this temple here. What do you need? You see, you can ask it. Well, we need this, this, this. You see. So, that's some ideas that can help you. Any other questions? Wow, there are three hands now. Yeah, I saw you were up before too, so you go, this is your turn.
Should we aspire to see the holy places of pilgrimage?
Should we aspire to see the holy places?
It's actually a very nice desire. It's stated here in the purport, the only remedy to mitigate lamentation is to go out on pilgrimage. Actually, it's a very valuable thing, and everyone should aspire to go to someday to see Vrindavan and Mayapur. Everyone. It's very, very, but it's good to actually be fixed up. Someone go, you know, be fixed up in chanting and following the principles first. Because if you're not fixed up, you're just like a newcomer to the temple, you know, you're still smoking cigarettes, something like that, and you hear about how nice Vrindavan is, and you go there and you know, smoke cigarettes in Vrindavan, you know, something. It's good to be fixed up in the principles first. You know, chanting your 16 rounds, rising early for Mangal Arati. Because when you go there, you don't want to be, you know, sleeping during Mangal Arati in the Holy Dham. Because in Vrindavan, of course, Mayapur is lenient, but in Vrindavan, you get 1,000 times result for any offense you commit. You get 1,000 times benefit for every devotional activity you do, and 1,000 times amplification for any offense you commit. So we therefore recommend that you should be, you know, fixed up nicely in Krishna consciousness and nicely fixed in sadhana. It's also stated that only by the mercy of your spiritual master can you enter Vrindavan. So that's something to consider also, is getting initiated first before you go. Because it's stated that the spiritual master is the revealer of the Dham, for the mercy. Of course, Prabhupada is there for all of us too. Even before initiation, you can go and beg Prabhupada's mercy, and that will also be effective for revealing the Dham to you. So, one has to, just like you would go on the altar to do puja with all cleanliness and all reverence, in the same mood one enters the holy Dham. Just like when we get out of the cab, immediately we get down on the ground and offer dandavats. Now we've entered into sacred land, you see. Every particle of dust of the holy Dham is more valuable than the entire treasury of Kuvera, you see. Every particle of dust. It's Krishna is actually present there. It's completely transcendental about all that appears like a Kali Yuga. You see Kali Yuga's influence there, but it's just a covering. Beneath the filth and madness of the especially Vrindavana is getting so crazy with all this development. Prabhupada made it a famous place, and now all the developers come. They're building high rise apartments. You know, there's wireless telephone towers everywhere. It's just like becoming a city, like a hellish city gradually. Vrindavan turning into a hellish city now, because of Prabhupada inspired everyone to come, and now they're coming and making money off the pilgrimage, all the popularity. The businessmen are coming and making money off of the people. So if you want to go to Vrindavan, go as soon as possible before it gets even more developed. When I first went there, across the street from the temple was an open field. And now there's a shopping center across the street from the temple. You know, it used to be quiet and peaceful. Now, you know, you're taking your life into your hands when you cross the street now, practically speaking. You've got to really be careful. I think they're building a tunnel under the road or a bridge so that one can cross safely across the road. But you go as soon as possible, because Vrindavan is becoming more and more covered every year. Go as soon as possible to Vrindavan, especially. Mayapur is the whole different scene. All development is ISKCON development. It's wonderful. But in Vrindavan, the karma is developing to make money off the devotees and people and all the Hindu pilgrims who come there.
Because the devotees are buying apartments, especially the...
Yeah, devotees, and also, yeah. See, we have a huge expansion of our movement in India now. It's taking off like rocket. We have thousands and thousands of initiated devotees in India, and they all would like to have an apartment in Vrindavan. So, you know, on your vacation, you go up to Vrindavan. Why go to some mundane place? Go to Vrindavan on your vacation. So now they're selling all these apartments in Vrindavan. Developers come, devotees are buying up, the prices are going higher, 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 just like real estate boom, you know, territory. So go there as soon as possible to Vrindavan, before it comes even more covered over by, you know, economic development. It's still the holy Dham, and it's Krishna is still there. I would recommend going there as soon as possible. If you're chanting 16 rounds and you're fixed in the regulated principles, then you should go as soon as possible. And beg Prabhupada's mercy, that only Srila Prabhupada, by the mercy of you, can I enter into this holy abode, so please give me your mercy. I can actually enter into the real Vrindavan. Beg Prabhupada's mercy. Okay, next question. And there's some other hands up over here. I saw two more hands up. All right.
I want to ask if it's a good thing being skeptical. Is it a good thing to be skeptical?
It is a good thing to be practical? Skeptical. Yeah. Actually, being skeptical is practical. Because in this world, 99.9999% of the people are going to cheat you. So being skeptical means you're intelligent. So we encourage you to be very skeptical. But... you have to ultimately be skeptical of skepticism also. We say that if you want to be a skeptic, then carry skepticism all the way to its final conclusion, which is to finally be skeptical about skepticism also. You see, the Mayavadis, they are total skeptics. They say, false, 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 18, 18, 18, 18, 18, 18, 18, 18. But when the Mayavadi realizes, I've taken this axe, I've chopped down the whole forest of material attachments. Chop, 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 chop. I've thrown away all material attachments now with this chopper of skepticism. Now what's left to throw away? The chopper. Now I got to throw away the chopper. This is a realization I had when I was a spiritual seeker back in 1968. I had read books, Mayavadi books, you know, and I was denying, not this. I was actually going to India just to become a renunciate. I was giving up the whole idea of education, the school, the Western world. I was actually on my way to India, just to become a sadhu in India, you know, a mendicant, holy beggar in India. I was just going to go to India, become a holy beggar the rest of my life. And I was just denying everything. But then one night on the way to India, I had this realization. I actually wrote it down on a piece of paper. I thought it was really profound. I denied until I could deny no longer, and then I had to start accepting. So skepticism is good to cut down all the illusory, you know, all the, as one songwriter said, I saw the great blunder my teachers had made, scientific delirium madness. So it's very good to be skeptical of all this insanity that's being shoved down our throats by the leaders, by the teachers, by the poets, by the songwriters, by the movie producers. They are just cramming all of this nonsense down our throats. It's complete garbage. So to be skeptical of that, that is first class. You see. But as I realized, after I denied everything, now I'm just going to get to India and become a mendicant, and that's it. I realize now I've denied everything. Now denial has to also be denied. Skepticism has to also be thrown out. So then I realize now I have to start accepting. What do I accept? I've denied all the crud of this material world. Now what will I accept? And then something said, go to San Francisco. Don't go to India, go to San Francisco. I was on my way to India. I was heading east to India, you see. But then something said, go to San Francisco. So I turned around and went west to San Francisco. And I hitchhiked up there to Golden Gate Park. And there they were, the Harinam party. Coming back from that place, they went to a place called Hippie Hill to do Harinam, and they were coming back to the temple on 518 Frederick Street. They invited me to the temple. And I, you know, I wasn't quite ready to surrender, but, you know, the seeds were planted. The seeds were getting planted. I realized that I had to accept something. And I realized, at that point, instead of renouncing the world, I have a mission to try to save the world. This is a mission that I must be a part of, saving the world. Instead of renouncing the world, save the world, you see. That was the realization. That's what I realized I had to accept. I had to be part of a movement that would save the world. I didn't recognize it was the Hare Krishna movement at first. That took a while to realize that. But I knew I had to be part of it. I mistakenly thought it was the hippie movement, actually. But I thought the Hare Krishnas were part of the hippie movement, you know. But I finally realized the hippie movement is just nonsense, and the Hare Krishna movement is the real movement, you know, for saving the world. So, yeah, the skepticism is good, but you have a certain point, you have to realize that negativity will not pull you through. It'll save you from a lot of garbage, but in the final analysis, negativity or skepticism will not liberate you. You understand? Okay. All right, next question. Another one. I'll let you have a turn now. Okay.
You spoke about the love exchanges between devotees, but what about the love exchange with non-devotees?
Actually, everyone is a devotee. They just don't realize it. If you give them your love, they'll become devotees also. How do you give them your love? Give them a book. Give them prasad. Invite them to the program. Actually, everyone is a devotee. They just forgot. That's all. Everyone in the whole world is a devotee. They're simply sleeping. They're in a dream that they're not a devotee. You have to wake them up in their dream. That is love. Okay, good. Now, any questions on this then? Well, the ladies are really going strong today on questions. Now we'll give Draupadi a chance.
Dacă cineva noi oferim o șansă pentru conștiința de Krishna să-și o dezvolte și el drept protest că nu vrea face o ofensă, ar trebui să-i acordăm o a doua șansă sau să-l lăsăm în pace?
So, if we offer somebody chance to advance in Krishna consciousness...
Offer them what?
A chance?
Okay.
To advance in Krishna consciousness. But they make offenses. They don't want to accept and they make offenses. Should we offer them the second chance?
There is what's called the ninth offense against the chanting of the holy names. And that is to preach the glories of the holy name to the faithless. If you're in your first attempt, they say no, then what I recommend is you be very clever and think of how to approach them in a different way so they will say yes. That is the kindness of the devotee. Sometimes you have to be very cunning. It's like formerly when I was supporting our preaching center in Austin by doing a little travel business. I was selling tickets, airline tickets to India. That was my travel business, Travelrama. So one of my business partners, he was a South Indian Christian. And I brought prasadam to him one day at his travel agency. Some prasadam cookies. So I was giving him a chance to advance in Krishna consciousness by offering him a cookie. And he was thinking to reject that cookie. He said, is this prasadam? Because in India they know what prasadam means. The Christians also know, but when Hindu says prasadam, they know you don't touch it, it's prasadam. Dirt, you know, dirty thing, prasadam. When offered to Krishna, it's dirty, contaminated thing. So he asked me, is it prasadam? And I said, oh no, it's not prasadam. And he took it. He said. So in this way, you have to be clever. If your first attempt is not successful, And you have to think, how can I find a way to give this person Krishna consciousness? You have to be very smart, very clever. You're a smart girl, you see. You have to think, how can I give this person the opportunity to advance in Krishna consciousness? Okay, next question. All right.
If a man is ignorant due to the circumstances of Kali Yuga and wants to do good but does not know good from evil, will Krishna reveal himself by simply tossing a dice, or does a man has the duty?
Reveal himself by doing what?
By tossing a dice.
Dice.
Again.
Or does the man has the duty of overcoming his ignorance?
By the mercy of a Vaishnava, he can become saved. Therefore, you should go out and preach. By the mercy of a Vaishnava, he will be saved. So go out and preach. Tell the world about Krishna. Save them. By the mercy of a Vaishnava, they will be saved. You go out and preach there.
If someone is an ignorant, isn't it when we have a human form, isn't it a duty for a person to take up?
It is a duty of every human being to become Krishna conscious. They, by not becoming Krishna conscious, they're making their duty. But they don't know that because they've been misguided by the rascals, the rascal politicians, the rascal professors, excluding Murari Krishna. You see? They've been misguided. So, therefore, it's our duty to approach them and induce them to take a book, or to come to a program, or, you know, somehow it's our duty to help them become awakened. You see, that's our responsibility as servants of Prabhupada. Prabhupada's mission, he told us, become guru, deliver the whole world. He told us on December 17, 1973 in Los Angeles, become guru, deliver the whole world. That's Prabhupada's mission. He wants everybody to be delivered. So if we are true followers of Prabhupada, then we will accept the family business as our responsibility. You see? Yeah. It's like in Vrindavan, I have the kurta made, tailor-made at Ganga Prasad and Sons cloth shop in Loy Bazaar. So they passed the business down from family. I've seen I've been going there for like 30 years, I guess. But they have the great-grandfather, and then the grandfather, in this way it's coming down generation after generation. You grow up in that family, you don't think of going out to college. No, you just take up your role in the family business. And then you pass it on to your sons. It goes down generation after generation. Ganga Prasad and Sons cloth business, you know, clothing store. So in our Vaishnava culture, that's what it is. It's a family business. Bhaktivinoda Thakura especially, you see, the grandfather is blessing the whole world with Krishna consciousness. Lord Chaitanya, but Bhaktivinoda was the first one who gave it practical shape when he sent that manuscript to McGill University in Montreal back in 1896, the Life and Precepts of Lord Chaitanya, the same year that Prabhupada appeared, you see. So now it's been passed down to Bhaktisiddhanta, to Srila Prabhupada, and now Prabhupada has passed it down to us. This is your duty now. My Guru Maharaj gave me this duty, and now I'm leaving the world, and now it's your duty to make the whole world Krishna conscious. It's a family business. So we have to educate everyone. We have to think how we can educate everyone in this higher planet to know who they are, to know what is their duty, to how they can achieve the perfection of life. Is that clear? Does that help you? All right. I know we're going way over time now, half an hour. I don't know how. It's up to you. We're on your servants here, Prabhu. Should we end now?
There is one more question.
One more question? Okay. Who didn't ask yet? All right.
Ascultă orice resentiment față de cineva ne umple inima de murdărie. Mie nu place să trăiesc în trecut nici de lucruri urâte, nici de lucruri frumoase. Dar câteodată când ai probleme cu cineva, se repetă de N ori, de N ori, de multe ori, atunci fără să priau am așa resentimente. Ce cum și îmi dau seama, dar nu știu cum pot să mă corectez.
You said that holding grudges fills our heart with smudge, and she doesn't like to hold grudges, but sometimes when somebody does things again and again and again, it is very difficult not to hold this grudge. And how can we overcome this problem?
Well, you have to speak to your authority. If there's some devotee in the temple that you're not getting along with well, there's constant misunderstanding and fighting going on between yourself and that devotee, then you should talk to your temple authority, Murari Krishna Prabhu. I'm having this difficulty in my relationship with this devotee. Please help us to overcome this fighting mood between ourselves, you see. Take the help of a mediator. This was Sanatana Goswami used to do that. He used to act as a mediator in Vrindavan. Prabhupada told us that there were householders living in Vrindavan also, even the time of the Goswamis. And some, you know, in household life, sometimes, you know, clashing, you know. So sometimes there'd be a dispute. They couldn't work it. The husband and wife could not resolve it. The husband said one thing, the wife said another thing, it's back and forth, you know, there's no resolution for the dispute between the husband and the wife. So they would go to Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami would hear the wife's side and the husband's side. He would hear both sides. And then he would say, you are right and you are wrong, and they would accept. So in this way, by going to a third person, a senior Vaishnava, you take a third person as a mediator, you see. And the two of you that you're having trouble with, you both go to him and take his decision as authoritative. And go on the basis of that mediator's advice, and then you can work out the conflict.
Dar sunt care nu sunt devotate, care vin mereu pe aici și nu sunt, și dacă ai probleme mereu, cum poți totuși?
Sometimes the people we have conflict, they are not devotees, but we have conflict with them, and then it's very difficult.
With non-devotees? That's natural. I have a big conflict with the non-devotees. They're eating meat. They're killing the babies. I have a very big conflict with all of them. I have a very, very big conflict. I have a big complaint about them. Very big complaint. These political leaders, how much they're misguiding the people. I have a very big complaint with them. Very big conflict. And with such people, I'm fighting to defeat them. My goal is to defeat these rascals. These non-devotees, my goal is to defeat the rascals. I said, Prabhupada, want him. He wants to defeat them. Get them to accept Krishna. Okay, and that's our allotted quota. And we thank you all very, very much for your participation in this movement. Kindly take it very, very seriously to always respect the devotees, always have loving relationship with the devotees. And I guarantee you, if you do that, the Krishna prema will blossom within your heart like an amazing lotus flower. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gantarad Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.
Shankar Shankar
Prabhu ki jai. ISKCON Romania devotees ki jai.